allow any American, British, or Israeli ship to pass through our waters. Our army has targeted more than 100 ships, and the number will double unless the killing of the people of Gaza stops. We are ready to go and fight for the Palestinians in Gaza, and we promise that we can make Israel disappear.
In the latest development, the Yemeni army spokesman announced the targeting of the Israeli ship MSC Darwin in the Gulf of Aden with multiple drones and naval missiles. The Yemeni armed forces have also launched several ballistic missiles toward the Israeli-occupied city of Eilat.
Every week, Yemenis hold fresh rallies across the country to express their solidarity with Palestinians amid the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. People here vow that they will continue their support for Palestinians until the full liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Washali, Sana.
On Friday, a new national transport strike caused major disruptions in several Italian cities, including Rome, Milan and Naples. The four-hour industrial action called by the trade union FISA-CONFIL affected local bus, metro and tram services, with strike timetables varying from city to city. The strike coincided with the super long weekend of April 25th, or Liberation Day, a time when tourists flock to Italian cities. CONFIL FISA said that the nationwide strike is in protest over a number of issues ranging from job security and better working conditions to safety in the workplace.
Decades of wild privatization policies and budget cuts due to austerity measures have resulted in an overall precarization of the labor market. Workers' rights have been eroded, with severe consequences on wage security and living conditions.
The public transport sector, together with the health sector, has been the number one victim of budget cuts by consecutive governments under the pretext of promoting efficiency in the public administration. This strategy has not worked, as the current little public funding of private transport groups has to include a profit for the group itself. Thousands of bus drivers have been bearing the brunt for this enormous budget downsize. They work more hours for less money. A bus driver earns roughly 1,600 euros a month, but half of their pay goes into house rent or loan repayments.
And then there is the economic crisis that is plaguing Italy. Italians are grappling with serious economic hardships. The cost of living due to high inflation and high energy prices is biting hard in Italy, with an increasing number of families struggling to make ends meet. At the end of 2023, the number of people living in absolute poverty rose to almost 6 million, about 10% of the population, its highest level in about a decade. This, as about 6 more million Italians live in a state of relative poverty.
Our institutions are covering up the reality of the situation. All prices have been dramatically going up since the start of the war in Ukraine. The cost of fuel and that of tomatoes, vegetables, have gone up big time. What have not gone up is salaries and wages for the vast majority of the population.
Earlier this week, the European Parliament adopted a reform of the EU's rules for national debt and deficits. Some analysts have slammed these new rules, saying that they will once again impose a fiscal straitjacket on member states' national budgets, promoting short-term thinking and not safeguarding public investment in social welfare. Max Civili, Turin.
As Iran marks the anniversary of the failed U.S. military operation in the central Tabas Desert, people in the country say the Sands were the agents of God. A memorial ceremony was held in the capital, Tehran, with the event highlighting the budged American operation in which U.S. choppers crashed in the desert.
On April 24, 1980, the U.S. military carried out a cover operation in Iran by the order of President Jim Carter. The operation, dubbed Eagle's Claw, failed due to major sandstorms in the central Tabas Desert. The failed operation resulted in the death of American soldiers. Iranians believe the sands were the agents of God.
The botched American mission was an attempt to release 52 staff of the U.S. Embassy, known as the Den of Espionage, who had been held after the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
The incident of Tabas was a helping hand from the Almighty God to defend the great nation of Iran. And also the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, said the sands were appointed by God. Even the sand rose in support of the Iranian nation. And that bitter incident happened to the American regime.
Unlike the previous years, this year's memorial isn't just a history lesson. It is also an opportunity to reflect on Iran's recent anti-Israel retaliatory attack, dubbed Operation True Promise, which showed the true power of Iran's military forces. Since the failed U.S. Operation Eagle Claw, Iran has boosted and upgraded its defense capabilities and can now stand up to all kinds of threats.
And civilians will not hesitate to retaliate from our own land. The True Promise operation was executed in a specific manner which is classified right now. We use scores of drones, crews, and ballistic missiles with proper timing to successfully penetrate the complicated Israeli air defense systems and strike our targets with pinpoint accuracy.
Iran has shown that threats from its enemies have only strengthened its will to defend what belongs to the nation. And now, it seems that the West has woken up to Iran's military powers after Operation True Promise.
Reza Hashemi, Tehran.
A recent United Nations report predicts that approximately 16 million individuals in Afghanistan will be struggling to gain access to food this year. To get a better understanding of the situation, we visited a family in Kabul facing acute food shortages. The Rukhshana family's daily struggle mirrors the difficulties faced by countless households across the country.
I lost my husband during the war in our hometown. I don't have a male provider and I can't find a source of income. One of my grandkids polishes boots, but that is not enough for our family. It has been a long time since the last time we had rice and potatoes in our home. We barely eat two meals a day, which is stale breads and tea. My children are asking for soup and I feel so bad as I can't make it for them.
Our situation here is so difficult that we can hardly survive. It is because there is no income or food to eat. If we eat during the day, we should sleep with empty stomachs at night. There are people who skip meals to feed their children. Some families beg for food but fail to find some because almost no one has a better situation. We used to receive some aid from the United Nations World Food Program, but now it is gone and has left people to their fate.
According to the UN report, the Afghan population cannot fulfill essential needs, including health care, food, employment, and shelter. Some local experts argue that the current hardships faced by Afghans stem from prolonged foreign interventions and conflicts, suggesting that those involved bear a responsibility to aid in the crisis resolution.
I think all the misery and economic hardships that Afghans are going through today stem from the shameful U.S.-West intervention and wars in Afghanistan. If they had let us build constructive economic relations with our neighbors, we would not be so broken today. The U.S. and its allies are responsible because they came and destroyed our infrastructure here, and on the other hand, they imposed economic sanctions after their withdrawal. Today, they cannot turn a blind eye on what they have created.
As the international community's attention shifts away from Afghanistan and the foreign aid continues to shrink, the Afghan people still hope for a means of survival that will pull them back from the edge of crisis. Millions of Afghans are facing emergency levels of food insecurity and malnutrition. The UN agencies warn that the situation is expected to worsen rapidly if urgent action are not taken by the global community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children, Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's 2-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher, as reports suggest that Israeli forces had confiscated the bodies of more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim martyrs. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, and here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough, expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region. With the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces, West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the heads of Iran's three branches of government and a number of current and former government officials. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on April 3, 2024. And the remembrance of Allah is surely greater. The Holy Quran, chapter 29, verse 45. According to this noble verse, the main benefit of the ritual prayers is the remembrance of God, which brings happiness, progress, betterment, and helps one to avoid sin. The night of Qadr is the night of destiny. During the month of Ramadan, one can shape their destiny by harmonizing with the night of Qadr. This is not a small matter. This is of great importance for those who earnestly pursue it. What is needed during these nights is asking and a yearning to ask. And of course, the night of Qadr stands out from all the other nights of the year. The rest of the nights of Ramadan have more or less the same attributes. These are what develop, cleanse, and polish the intellect, the human mind, and the heart. When these qualities exist in an individual, they have a ripple effect on society.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The collective identity of society is shaped by the identity of its individual members and the impact they have on society. Once we are able to correct ourselves, our influence on society increases accordingly. This is what strengthening the self means. Well, these were the aspects of Ramadan affecting, firstly, individuals and indirectly affecting society. But besides these, Ramadan is a month that is related to the society. It is the month of helping others. It is the month of giving charity and showing kindness. It is the month of iftar, the evening meal for breaking the fast, and giving iftar to others has been so highly recommended. It isn't told to just give iftar to the less fortunate. The spirit of being in contact with and helping others, being together and showing kindness to others are some of the special features of the month of Ramadan. Therefore, Ramadan presents a wonderful opportunity for spiritual healing.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Calls are growing from around the world for an independent and transparent investigation into mass graves recently found in the Gaza Strip. Nearly 400 bodies have so far been recovered from mass graves at two hospitals which were raided by Israeli forces in Gaza. Palestinian officials say there's evidence of field executions and even people being buried alive. Is there any war crime that the Israeli regime has not committed in over 200 days of its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip? And what red lines remain for Tel Aviv to cross so that Western countries led by the United States move to stop this occupying regime? Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have author, journalist, and producer Sakina Daoutou, joining us from the British capital, London. And also we have political analyst Mr. Shabi Rizvi, who's also joining us from the British capital.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the program to both of our guests. Let's start off with Ms. Datu in London. It's 203 days of relentless death and destruction. Is it clear now that the Israeli onslaught and massacre is not just against the resistance, but against all of the people in Gaza?
I think there never was doubt at any stage that this was not just against the resistance, but that it was against the people of Palestine. From day one, when we have watched deaths of not just men and women, but children. I mean, we have not seen in history how many children being killed in one go like this indiscriminately. So I think it has been very, very clear from day one, the kind of warfare that has happened, the kind of atrocities we have witnessed, the blanket bombing of people anywhere, the targeting in particular of children, these were all very clear signs, I think, from right from the start, that this was not looking for Hamas, this was not looking for any kind of resistance. This was a war on the Palestinian people, and I think that has continued to become more and more open, such that even those people who probably at one point doubted or were rather confused by the Western media, who has a lot of propaganda going around, and maybe were believing that they were actually out there looking for terrorists, in their words, as freedom fighters. But it is now clear to anyone. I think there isn't probably a soul around the world watching the genocide going on who now believes that what Israel is doing is actually targeting all Palestinians.
Mr. Razvi, as Israel pushes ahead with its genocidal war in Gaza, Hamas has called for an international probe into the mass graves that were found under two of the hospitals that were raided by Israeli occupation forces. The Palestinian defense officials reported evidence of field executions and that a number of the bodies had their hands tied, while some others still had medical tubes attached to them, indicating that they may have been buried alive. 400 bodies have been recovered, some of them even children. There's no way to get around this gut-wrenching and horrifying war crime that the Israelis have committed.
Hello, assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much for your invitation. Look, as I always open these programs with our condolences to over 35,000 martyrs in Palestine and many more in the West Bank, plus also our real supplications for the families whose injured and maimed individuals. So really, we have all the sympathy and support for them. Look, at the end of the day, your word heart-wrenching is really perhaps not sufficient to describe the remorse, the anger that people are sort of expressing. It's palpable on the streets of London, Washington, Los Angeles, all over the planet, that people are clearly seeing that this particular entity, the Zionist entity, the brutal, barbaric entity, has really gone over all sort of accepted moral parameters that one would have had. At the end of the day, Israel is able to commit this genocide because it is being very clearly supported by Washington and the European Union, except for a few European nations who are really making noises against the Zionist regime. But the facts on the ground are that, as Bernie Saunders today or yesterday in response to Netanyahu's interference in American politics, when Netanyahu put forward a video clip saying that American authorities should take strong steps against the protesters in USA. And Bernie Sanders replied, said it is not anti-Semitic to hold Israel to account. And he also further said that the arms being supplied to the Zionist regime is against the American law and its constitution. So we have to really wait and see how many more voices from the political establishment will start jumping ship when they see that the ship is sinking. And also the pressure that's being mounted by the young people in the USA. What I call this is probably the Vietnam moment, as it happened in the 60s when America was engaged in a brutal war in Vietnam. And it was really the students who came out on the streets and at campuses which allowed the Washington and its allies to change their mind. And particularly the US administration had to sue for peace in Paris at that time. And I think hopefully we would move in that direction quite rapidly. But insofar as investigation, your question sort of alluded to was that I don't think there would be any credible investigation which will allow independent investigators to really ascertain that this was a crime that was committed heinously by the Zionist regime. This is one which has come out open, but very clearly, as you all know, there have been many crimes that have been committed in the last nearly 7 months.
Ms. Datu, do you agree with Mr. Rezvi? Do you see this issue of an independent probe transpiring? Will it happen? Will the Israelis allow independent experts to access the site of the mass graves? And will the findings ultimately lead to any consequences for the Israelis?
There is not a chance in the world that Israel will allow any kind of investigation. I mean, this entity, this Zionist entity that is refusing to allow aid, life-saving medicines for Palestinians, there is no chance that they have any kind of intention to allow anyone to probe anything at all. The double standards of the world are very clear here. Here in the UK Parliament, this question was asked that when there was something similar found in Ukraine, the Parliament discussed this. And, you know, why was there no mention of the mass graves in Israel that have been found in Palestine? And, you know, the question was fogged off completely. So the double standards of the, you know, those who are complicit in the genocide are very clear. At the same time, I think we have to remember that we have seen in the past 6 months complete failure of international bodies being able to take any kind of decision that has any teeth at all. So the United Nations, we saw ICJ, yes, there were bits and pieces here and there, but they have not been able to really come up with any solution which tells us that, you know, these bodies are defunct in reality. And going forward, the only way things are going to change is when now people, like the way we see students, you know, protesting in the US, we have to see this kind of movement globally. We have to see this kind of people movement in the Arab world to start with. And so even though we know their governments are also complicit, because silence is being complicit in a genocide, however, people have got to rise now. They've got to gather the courage to say enough is enough. Nobody is there to speak for us. Nobody is there to, there is nobody internationally that we can count on. So I think I don't have much trust in any of the international bodies or any of the Western countries conducting any kind of a probe that would bring out the reality.
Okay, Ms. Dutton, I'm going to stay with you for the next question. Students and faculty members at universities across the USA continue to hold rallies in solidarity with Palestinians. This is something, of course, unprecedented with regards to Palestinian support inside the U.S., from California to Texas to Massachusetts, and also similar demonstrations are spreading in other countries as well, even Jewish communities They've also been participating in the rallies to support the Palestinian cause and to end this genocidal massacre. Talk to us about that and about the police clampdown on campuses, which is being seen as an attack on freedom of expression.
In terms of, you know, being unprecedented, yes. In relation to Palestine, this is unprecedented. But also, I think we need to remember that any kind of revolution or a major change around the world has started with students. This is the body, once the protests take over, you know, people at university levels, this is when you know that the society is really changing. Young people have got the vigor, the passion to make a change. They are the next generation. Therefore, if their views are changing, then that's a big thing. I think the brutality that we see of the police is nothing surprising. We have to understand that this now, at the moment, has become in most countries a fight between the ruling class and their own people. So whether we are talking of the Western countries, we are talking of you know, Middle Eastern countries, there is a group of those who rule upon us, and it is in their interest, of course, for monetary reasons, for power, they want to keep the status quo as it is. However, the people have been watching all this massacre. I mean, heart-wrenching, you mentioned earlier. I don't think there is any genuine human being who doesn't feel continuous pain watching what is going on. We've been witnessing now, you know, in Rafah, the bombing that has been taking place at the moment. So there is a divide, I think. And because it is a divide, things are going to get a lot more nastier, in my view, before they get better. Because when somebody is losing control, they will be like a wounded animal. They will be hitting left, right, and center. And now we can see that these police and the ruling classes are causing violence upon their own people because they cannot accept that people have woken up and are seeing the truth. I think that in the shorter term, we will see a lot more violence, a lot more difficult times. But this is really the beginning of the end of Zionism globally.
Mr. Razvi, you alluded to the demonstrations earlier. The students in America, they want universities to divest finances from manufacturers that sell weapons to Israel. They also want Washington to end its military and financial support for the Zionist regime. Those demands have been met with violent crackdowns by U.S. police, and the protesters have been called everything from anti-Semites to terrorists. Again, more double standards when it comes to criticizing Israel.
Well, it's not just double standards. I think it's the moral compass which has been completely lost on the American and European ruling elite, that they really have no fiber of morality left in them. And that's the reason why they're acting the way they are, supporting, you know, doing everything in their power to really rescue the Zionist entity. So what they are doing is, as the sister very clearly pointed out, that things will probably get worse before they get better. And again, I want to put in some historical context. Back in the 60s, when there were demonstrations going on against the war in Vietnam, there was a sort of shooting of students at Kent State University in the USA when the students were demonstrating. So far, we haven't had any deaths of students by troops and security forces in the USA. But the potential is there. It has happened over 60 years ago in the USA itself. So they may bring out firepower and shoot down a few students. One doesn't know how the completely immoral regimes in Washington, London, and Paris are really thinking, that they really want to silence any opposition to their support, their unmitigated, undiluted support for the Zionist regime. And people have indeed awakened, not only awakened, but they're actually trying to hold their rulers and their elites to account. And that's where I think the elite are getting frightened, and they will sort of continue to do whatever they can to really suppress the demonstrations, and at the same time continue to give financial and military support to the Zionist entity. As you know, only a few days ago, $95 billion dollars were written to support Israel, Ukraine, and other entities to fight against what they call terrorists or state. So what we are seeing is that the ordinary people in America's taxpayers' money is being given to the Zionist entity. And whilst we know very well the education system in USA is creaking, the healthcare does not exist for a prosperous nation like USA. People are sleeping in the streets from New York to Seattle to Los Angeles, all over the place. And, you know, 50 million people in the USA have no healthcare, while the U.S. taxpayer money goes to Tel Aviv, and there the settlers get free houses, free healthcare, free education, and money to live comfortably. So people are realizing that their tax dollars are being wasted on a Zionist entity. So that's another angle that people are really looking at, not just sort of divestment and sort of stopping armament trade, armament support for the Zionist entity.
Ms. Sekinedato, I want to bring the same issue to you as well. The rallies, they gain more steam to protest the recent approval of more military aid for the Israeli regime. About that aid package, billions of taxpayer dollars will continue to go to Israel to continue its genocide. What was your reaction to the approval of that bill?
I think, you know, in addition to what Brother Shabir was just saying, 40 million people, this is 12% of the population of the U.S., is on food stamps. This is the basic need of food, you know, and then we've seen 14.1 billion, you know, committed to Israel and only to go for military equipment. It just beggars belief, to be honest. I think if I was an American, I would not be able to understand this. And this is exactly what is happening with people awakening. I mean, how does it make any sense to anyone that you are subjugating your own people? Who, and by the way, it isn't just in the US. This is happening in the UK too. I mean, being the seventh largest economy here in the UK, the economic situation of the people isn't great. We see homelessness. We see, you know, food banks rising every day. And yet our leaders every time are spending money and sending them, you know, to Israel. So I think people really are finding this very, very uncomfortable. I mean, I have had people come up to me. So, you know, when I travel on the underground, for example, I wear my Palestinian badge everywhere. And I have had literally people stop me, people who I would not expect to be at all pro-Palestinian, and tell me, thank you. Thank you for wearing this. And we are feeling the pain. Sometimes we are not able to express it. These are people who will say to me, we are Sikh, we are Christians, we don't believe in any religion, you know, Jewish, but we are really hurting. So I think this is one aspect, but the other aspect is people are really angry. They're very angry, and coming elections in both countries, in the US and UK, I think will reveal very clearly how unhappy people are, that their hard-earned tax money is so easily being sent to Israel, and that too, to kill children. I don't think anyone now can stand this.
Mr. Rivkin, let's backtrack a few weeks now. How do you view the massive global support that Iran received for carrying out Operation True Promise against the Israelis on April the 13th? The support that Iran received for shattering Israel's myth of invincibility. Now, minus the U.S. and other accomplices of the Israelis, almost all regional countries, they expressed support for what Iran carried out.
Firstly, the Israel's military invincibility was obviously shattered on 7th of October when Hamas mounted a terrific military operation. not myself, but other military experts have very clearly sort of expressed and articulated that that may be taught at military schools, how to defend your land. But of course, what Iran did is an extraordinary event in the historical context. What has happened is that for the last, since the advent of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, Iran has obviously experienced all kinds of problems that has been inflicted on the nation. They've had sort of multiple sanctions from them, eight-year war, scientists have been assassinated, and of course, the ultimate was really the assassination and murder of its officials at an embassy in a third country. A sovereign entity, a sovereign land was invaded in a sovereign country. So that really left no option for Iran to do what they did to respond. But they gave ample warning, nearly 2 weeks of it. And what did show that Iran is not going to keep quiet. And as the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rehber has quite clearly said that the days of hit and run are over. And I think the U.S., and its allies who supported Israel when Iran had defended itself by launching a missile and drone attack on Israel shows clearly that Israel is not able to defend itself on its own. It needs USA, France, and UK to do so, plus also Jordan participating in that particular enterprise. So what it shows clearly is that in future, what will happen is that Iran has clearly shown the world that it will not only defend itself, but also, you may recall, at that particular night for 24 hours, there were no bombing that took place in Gaza. There was a respite for a few hours for the people of Gaza when these drones were being stopped in halfway reaching Israel. So the resistance movement, the people, the oppressed people of the world, and anyone who is standing for their own right now feel rather proud, happy, and as I've said somewhere else, that the oracle of the oppressed, which is what the Islamic Republic of Iran has spoken.
And a final thought from Ms. Datu. Israel has been a menace to all countries around it, like Lebanon and Syria, where Israel constantly violates their sovereignty and carries out illegal strikes on a regular basis. As Mr. Rezvi alluded to earlier, Iran has said the era of Israeli hit and run is over. Has Iran now set a precedent where Israeli attacks and destabilizing actions will be dealt with appropriately?
Iran has definitely set precedence. And, you know, when we look at the history of Iran, there's been so much propaganda against the Islamic Republic for so long. And I think for me and for a lot of Muslims out there, the way we see it is the religious values and morals